Good morning and welcome to the KUNM Collins Show. My name is Kathleen Sabo. The intensifying drought has brought one of our state's large wild animals into more distinct focus. Searching for food and water, once plentiful in the mountains surrounding some of our largest cities, bears are walking into urban backyards, leading police on foothills, neighborhood chases, and even wandering close to the Santa Fe Plaza. Today we'll be talking about bears, how to live with them, how to avoid living with them, their unique nature, and what they mean within our food chain and our psyche. Joining me in the studio to discuss these issues are the founder of the 600-member nonprofit organization, Sandia Mountain Bear Watch, Jan Hayes, and Stuart Liley, supervisor of the Big Game Program within New Mexico's Department of Game and Fish. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you. Welcome.
Joining us later by phone will be Dr. Lynn Rogers. He's the principal biologist of the Wildlife Research Institute in Ely, Minnesota, and chairman of the board of the North American Bear Center, who has been studying wildlife and black bears for over 40 years. If you would like to join in our discussion today, there are several ways for you to participate. You may email comments to callinshow@kunm.org. You may post comments on the Callin Show webpage at kunm.org, or you may call our local number, 277-5866, that's 277-KUNM, or our toll-free number, 1-877-899-5866, with questions and comments. Jan Hayes, you began your organization in 1994. What was the impetus for that?
Well, you know, I moved up to the Sandias, and we started having some bear problems after we were there about 10 years. And I thought, although I'd lived around bears and knew how to coexist with them because I'd lived in Alaska with bears in a small village, my neighbors didn't seem to know how to live with them, how to coexist with them. So I called Game and Fish. We got together, got some ideas and this and that, and I decided to just start an organization on trying to teach my neighbors how to coexist with these bears without having them trapped, removed, that sort of thing. You know, as a child, I lived in the interior of Alaska. We had a small village. We had bears there all the time, black bears. And they were just part of the fabric of the village. I mean, they were, we wouldn't, you know, we never removed them. They didn't have to be killed. And so I knew if we could if 500 people in the small village could coexist with 10 bears, people in the East Mountains could coexist with bears.
So, yeah. what is the current mission of your organization?
It's to inform and educate people what to do with their garbage, their bird seed, the hummingbird feeders.
Okay, and as a resident of that area, the Sandias and the East Mountains, mm-hmm. what are you experiencing this year with regard to bears?
You know, I think we may be facing an ecological disaster.
What makes you say that?
And let me stress May. There's just no food that we normally see. I mean, we've gone out. I've lived there 30 years, and I have Bear Watch members that have lived there even longer. And we've gone out and done a survey on our properties. Now, I own 6 acres, so that gives you an idea. And we haven't been able to find anything at our altitude. And bear corn, choke cherries, wild berries. I usually have apples, soft fruits, juniper berries, acorns, cactus pears. We're not seeing any of that. And so we're concerned. And so what I did is I called Rick Winslow.
Let's get into that in a little bit. Let me go ahead and ask Stuart. Mm-hmm. Stuart, now you're up in Santa Fe, and you're stationed up there with Game and Fish Department. Is Santa Fe having the same kind of conditions as...
Well, the state in general is under drought conditions and has been under kind of a historic drought conditions the past few years. So, yeah, we're experiencing similar conditions, but we're also getting the monsoonal rains that are just now starting. We should see some of those bear foods mass starting to produce. We've also seen some different areas in the state where we've had some snowfall that's helped produce some mass for bears in different areas. So across the state, it's not even, but definitely in general, we're dry in the state.
Okay, and as supervisor of the Big Game Program within the Department of Game and Fish, What and who do you supervise?
So I supervise all of our big game program biologists. So our elk biologist, deer biologist, antelope, bear, cougar, bighorn sheep as well.
Okay. And do you have a wildlife biologist on staff?
Yes. Each one of those species each have their own wildlife biologist on staff. Bear and cougar is combined, and so is deer and pronghorn. But each sheep, we have two biologists, for instance.
And so what is the role of the bear biologist then with the Game and Fish Department?
A lot of the role of those personnel is to assess populations and make recommendations for harvest. And that's the main role, but it's a population assessment and then make recommendations to the Game Commission.
When you say harvest, what do you mean by harvest?
Harvest is either human harvest, mortality, some kind of mortality, but in general, we're going to make recommendations for human harvest.
Okay.
Sport harvest.
Okay. On Tuesday morning this week, a bear was spotted in a tree in the Glenwood Hills area on the west side of the Sandia Mountains in Albuquerque, so on the Albuquerque side, and both the police and Game and Fish were called. Walk us through, if you will, what happens on the part of Game and Fish when a call is received about a bear in a residential area.
Right. So if a bear is seen in a residential area, a lot of times either they'll call the police department or they'll call the Game and Fish directly. If it's a call into the Game and Fish directly, it's going to normally go to one of our four area offices across the state. That's Las Cruces, Albuquerque, Roswell, and Raton. Once it originates there, they're kind of going to determine the situation and assess it and then determine if we need to send officers on site to handle the issue or not. For this Albuquerque instance, I don't know exactly what happened, but my guess would have been they would have called that district officer, informed him of it. The officer in his experience would have made the determination if he needs to respond to that call or if it's a bear maybe just wandering through its natural habitat and someone's seen it. If it was something where it was a response needed, he'll go out there, assess the situation, and make a determination if that bear needs to be captured or if it could be left alone and go back to the wild.
Is there a difference in response or conversation depending upon which side of the Sandias a bear is reported?
Well, every situation is going to be unique. We don't have a response that's different on one side or the other. It's officer discretion when it comes to that. They're going to make what's the best decision for the bear and what's the best decision for the citizen's safety as well.
Okay, Jen, what draws bears into residential areas?
Well, a study out of the White Mountain in Arizona showed that 90% of the problem was garbage, available garbage. So we recommend people buy either a bear-proof can, which I have, or you keep your garbage in a garage or a shed and put it out the morning to pick up. And then, of course, then you've got the hummingbird feeders, which the bears love if they're out. So we recommend that you hang those at least 10 feet up off the ground. And the seed feeders, same thing, 10 feet off the ground, or feed only enough seed to last a couple of hours in the morning for your birds.
Okay. In the bears that have been seen in the mountains these years, what is the condition of those bears? Has anybody reported anything to you about that?
You know, we're seeing a whole cross-section. We've seen some of the older, in fact, I had three adult male bears on my lot near my house last week, walking around literally just, two were in the daytime. I don't think they were garbage bears. I think they were bears that had come down from the mountain.
And how did you respond to that?
I watched them, and then I went out on my back deck and stomped my foot, and they ran.
Is that something that Game and Fish tells people to do, just sort of observe
Right, that's the best. We don't want people approaching bears. We'd like for an observation. It may be a unique experience for a landowner in that area to see it. We don't want those bears to become attracted or habituated to those properties. But if there's not a food source that they're coming into, they're not getting habituated to that area. If you observe them, they leave the area, go and search for natural foods is what our hope is for those bears.
There's something that I read in preparation for the show that bears learn very quickly how much better they can eat off of human garbage than they can with the foraging that they naturally do in the forests.
For sure.
Yeah. Now, does Game or Fish take any extra steps in any direction during times of intense drought to educate residents in or near bear habitat?
Yeah, for sure. And as Jan alluded to it. Part of her group is education and awareness, and that's a big thing that we're hoping to get, and we do continue to do, is our Bear Aware programs. And so anytime we come into a drought or stressful situation like this, we're going to see news releases. We're going to release them and kind of warning citizens or informing them that bears are on the prowl looking for foods. When times of natural food supply might be short, that's when occurrences of bears coming into towns, into your neighborhoods might increase. And what can we do to prevent them getting accustomed to human food and now being in relationship with humans and see that as a food source?
Do you hold any extra meetings or pass out information to people?
Right. We have a lot of different methods. We have flyers that we'll pass out at all the fairs. We have, again, like I said, we'll go to the news, the media to get awareness. In situations like Raton, where we have a big issue sometimes with bears coming into the garbage dumps, we'll send out postcards to every resident in that town to give them more bear awareness and so forth.
And Jen, how about Sandia Mountain Bear Watch? What have you taken any extra steps during this time of intense drought?
Well, in past years, we've done tremendous education. We've put ads in all Bear Country newspapers. And we did that for almost 5 years, every week, you know, what to do with garbage and so on. But this year, we're kind of stymied. When there's nothing for them to eat, what do you do?
Well, and you've talked with me about an idea that's come up for you.
Mm-hmm.
And go ahead, you know, you can tell us what is that idea.
Well, one of the things I went to the governor and I asked her for supplemental feeding for the bears in the Sandias.
No, I
talked to her people.
Okay.
And the reason I did that is the bears in the Sandias are basically a trapped population. In the old days, they could go down to the Rio Grande. If we had conditions like this, they could go down to the Rio Grande and forage down along the river and down in the valley and everything. Now they sit up there on that peak and they look, and there's a 500,000 people between them and the Rio Grande. On the other side of the Sandias, of course, you have more homes. We've also, on I-40, we've put up, DOT has put up fencing to keep the bears from crossing the interstate. I don't think we have enough underground areas for them to get across to the Manzanos.
Do we have any?
We have some.
Okay.
Just several. So they're basically trapped. And I think this would be a wonderful opportunity for the New Mexico Game and Fish. We've got the smallest mountain in the state. We've got the smallest population of bears in the state now there. For them to go in and do some supplemental feeding, use it as a study, and let's see if it works.
Well,
let's see if it keeps the bears out of Albuquerque and out of trouble.
And Stuart, are you familiar with this idea of feeding supplementally?
For sure. So supplemental feeding for all wildlife has come into concern, but I guess one of the biggest things with supplemental feeding, it's an artificial food source. So you're altering the natural behavior of wildlife.
What does it look like, supplemental feeding? Is it placed away from residential areas? What does it consist of, their normal diet?
No.
Okay.
Supplemental feeding is not their normal diet. Their normal diet is going to be what's available on the landscape today. So these animals have evolved through drought periods, through wet periods, and their populations fluctuate up and down throughout droughts. And during good years, they'll exceed. So by supplemental feeding, you're exceeding what bears' carrying capacity are in the dry years, and allowing them to stay at higher levels. If we don't come out of this, you have an artificially high bear population. Like Jan alluded to, the Sandias are isolated because of human development and encroachment on natural habitat. We have, as humans, have pushed those bears into that zone, which now has limited the amount of bear population that is available or can naturally live on that mountain. To do an artificial source, now you're creating more bears than that mountain can hold.
And, you know, Go ahead.
I disagree. Many of the studies have shown Utah. In 2001, they did supplemental feeding, and they did it because they had depredation on some cattle. You don't continue to supplement feed. You do it in a bad year. And some of the studies I've been looking at, they said there was no increase in population and it worked. I mean, Ann Bryant from Lake Tahoe area, they were having terrible problems with bears breaking into houses. One bear caused a fire, went in and turned over a stove, and the house burned down. And this went on for 2 or 3 years. And so the town of Tahoe got together, and they just supplementally fed. Just 1 year, the problem went away. They took the food way, way away from the village, from the town. And that was in 2007. And they haven't been having the problem since, nor have they supplementally fed since then.
Okay.
It just got them over, it got these bears over a starvation hump.
Okay, I know we'll get back to this, but you're listening to the KUNM Collins Show, and today we're talking about bears, how to live with them, how to avoid living with them, their unique nature, and what they mean within our food chain and psyche. I'm in the studio with Jan Hayes, founder of Sandia Mountain Bear Watch, and Stuart Lilly, supervisor of the Big Game Program within New Mexico's Department of Game and Fish. You can join us in our conversation. You can email comments and post comments at KUNM.org. You may call our local number, 277-5866, or our toll-free number, 1-877-899-5866. Tell us, have you had a close encounter with a bear? We'd like to know about it. Joining us right after the break will be Dr. Lynn Rogers, principal biologist with the Wildlife Research Institute in Ely, Minnesota, chairman of the board of the North American Bear Center. He's been studying wildlife and black bears for over 40 years. We'll take a short break. We'll be right back with you.
Support for KUNM comes from Pure, a member-owned insurer for high-net-worth families, offering expertise and resources to help prevent claims and resolve them without hassle when they happen. Pure. Love your insurance. More at pureinsurance.com.
You've really hung in there with that car. Through body damage, through the puppy chewing the seats, through the odometer turning over until it's far from a meaningful trade-in, through its refusing to run one more mile. You've begged it, cajoled it, dumped money in it. What more can you do? Give it to KUNM. We'll lovingly take it off your hands and send you a tax deduction. Plus, keep great radio coming your way. Call 888-KUNM-CAR. That's 888-586-6227.
We're talking about bears this morning on the KUNM Collins Show. I'm Kathleen Sabo. And joining us by phone now from Ely, Minnesota is Dr. Lynn Rogers. He's been studying wildlife and bears for more than 40 years. Welcome, Dr. Rogers.
Good morning, and thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you for being with us. You began studying bears in Michigan in 1967, moving black bears away from campgrounds and residential areas for the Michigan Department of Natural Resources. Why did the state of Michigan want to move these bears?
Because it's during a bad food period, the bears would get in trouble, and we'd move them away. By the time they'd come back, food conditions had changed, and usually they did not get into further trouble. And the hunters liked it because it preserved them for the hunting season.
Now, your study of black bears has been ranked one of the top four studies of large mammals in the world, alongside studies by the likes of Jane Goodall. You've formed trusting relationships with wild black bears, including mothers with cubs. In fact, I'm looking at a website page here from the Wildlife Research Institute where you're relaxed, sitting side by side with a very large black bear. What can you tell us about the nature of bears that is unique from other wildlife?
Well, they're just not like the media, the sensationalized media image of them. They're basically shy, and they're not looking for trouble. The idea that if bears lose their fear of people, then they'll attack assumes that they would like to attack if they only dared, but that's not their nature. And so we found that when we could get bears to trust us, and the bears didn't really like us, we weren't really a friend but not an enemy, we weren't a competitor for food but not a significant food giver, we were just there, and they became comfortable with us and went about their lives and nursed cubs, mated, foraged, made dens, whatever they do, and pretty much ignored us being right there.
Now, Dr. Rogers, we had an incident in New Mexico earlier this year in a town called Cimarron where a bear came into the home of an elderly woman, either opened a door or a window,
and I guess scratched her and then turned around and left. But not using her as a food source and maybe not finding a food source. But is that an anomaly, that kind of instance?
Yes, on the one hand. But when food is very scarce in the woods, they're looking for food wherever they could find it. And you hear about, you know, what you're supposed to do to prevent bear problems, reduce attractants, do aversive conditioning or whatever to make bears feel not welcome. But in good food years, very good food years, you wonder where the bears are. And you don't really need to do any of that stuff. They're not so attracted to bird feeders or garbage in those years, although sunflower seeds are a favorite food. So to some extent, you can get some bird feeder action, but problems are pretty low. If there's moderate food in the woods, then bears might be looking for some extra, and you have some problems. And then reducing attractants and aversive conditioning, one or the other or both, can be effective. But if food is very scarce, like in a severe drought, like was the case in Lake Tahoe in 2007, reducing attractants just means you're removing the buffers against house break-ins. And if you use aversive conditioning, it just makes the bears sneakier because they have no alternative. What bears do and what they eat depends on what the alternatives are. And they prefer the wild food. And they prefer to be out by themselves, not contending with people and all that. When you see that, that's a sign of hunger. And bear problems don't depend on whether bears are habituated, as they say, which means it's just that they've lost their fear of people and learned to ignore them. Or if they're food conditioned, it's just straight hunger.
Now we're in a very severe drought here. In fact, we're number one on the list of drought-stricken places in the United States, and it's been several years. And the issue that we have with bears, one of them in New Mexico, is that people have moved and are moving into or to the edges of what was surely once free-roaming bear habitat. Do you, given your studies, do you believe that human and bears can coexist in the same or neighboring habitat?
Well, where I'm studying bears right now is an example of that. And to make things worse, or at least more controversial, it's a community where they've been feeding bears since 1961. And what that led to is the people becoming more comfortable with bears. As they learned they weren't the dangerous animal that most people think, they'd see a bear go through a yard, think nothing of it. So in this area, they have come to coexist with bears quite well.
Let me go ahead and give our numbers. We're at locally 277-5866, toll-free 1-877-899-5866. We're talking about bears. Right now we're on the phone with Dr. Lynn Rogers from Ely, Minnesota. He's been studying black bears for over 42 years. We have Sandia Mountain Bear Watch's Jan Hayes in the studio and Stuart Lilly with the New Mexico Department of Game and Fish. Do you live in or near bear habitat, and what have you done to live with bears? So let's talk a little bit about that feeding issue, Dr. Rogers, because we had broached that topic here in the studio already. Were the people feeding the bears illegally?
No, it's legal to feed bears here. So they just, they were feeding birds, they were feeding deer. Bears were welcome too. It actually started, as the people here say, that there was somebody who's going to shoot a bear for tipping over his garbage can. And the neighbor said, well, here, not yet. Don't shoot him yet. Let me put food in my yard. See if you'll come to my yard instead of your yard. And it worked. And then other people saw that it worked. So they started doing it too. And then it became about a dozen households throughout the community, just a few hundred people. And people just got comfortable with bears, and the people that fed them enjoyed seeing them. And there were no bad food years here. House break-ins were virtually unheard of. I know of one. And so it just that's the tradition here. I'm not saying that should be everywhere, but where they tried it, all the things that people say would happen if people did that, that the bears would depend on that food, would become lazy, would forget how to forage naturally, they'd become more aggressive for food. All those things did not happen.
And what were they feeding them, Dr. Rogers?
I don't know. Over the years, probably a little bit of everything. But the main food now is the best food that they can get, typically almonds, pecans, just a variety of things, a lot of sunflower seeds.
Okay. Well, let me talk with Stuart Lally here a minute, who's with our Department of Game and Fish. Stuart, is it illegal to feed bears or any wildlife here in New Mexico?
Yes, it's illegal to feed or create a nuisance animal of wildlife in the state of New Mexico.
And is that a term of art, a nuisance animal? What does that mean exactly?
Basically, if you're feeding an animal, it attracts it. It's going to attract it to that food source, and they're going to come back to that food source. When it does, it might create a nuisance animal for your neighbors or for someone else, or create a problem in and around that area. There's not everybody wants bears within in their town, within their area. Your next door neighbor may have a fear of it, may not want it. They might have little kids that they don't want to have around bears. And so when you feed it, attract it to your area, you're now creating a nuisance wildlife.
And some might ask, what are people doing living in bear country if they don't want to have bears around? Let's bring our caller in. It's Emily from Albuquerque. Good morning, Emily. Thank you for joining us.
Good morning. Dr. Rogers has already addressed my question partially, but I'd like to ask him specifically what his opinion is based on his experience and research with regard to Jan's suggestion about the possibility of just one-year feeding during times of extreme drought and hunger. If Game and Fish were to embrace a project like that and to do something like that in New Mexico, what would his thoughts and recommendations be about that?
All right. And Emily, go ahead and hang on just in case. We'll see if you have a follow-up question. Go ahead, Dr. Rogers, please.
A one-year program like that was tried in Lake Tahoe, where it's illegal to feed bears. And what happened there was a terrible drought, terrible. The only water was Lake Tahoe. Bears had to come down out of the mountains. They were eating their fruit off people's fruit trees where people watered their lawns and stuff. They'd eat the grass, the dandelions, whatever. And then the authorities, the officials, told them, if you just reduce attractants, the bears will move on. And that would be the case if food was good or moderate in the woods, but not when food is essentially absent, because there's nothing for them to move on to. They're desperate for food, and that's the only place where there is food. So bears, as they reduced attractants, they were reducing the buffers against house break-ins, and house break-ins became dozens per day. It was just chronic all over the area. It was a widespread drought. And people saw what the officials were telling them, the conventional knowledge just wasn't working. So some citizens just put two and two together. It's not rocket science. The bears are hungry. They want to eat where the food is. Let's put the food somewhere else. So they started moving, dropping off food, airplane drops. Backpackers would take loads up and drop it up in the hills to lead them away. And where they did that, where they dared to do it, where they could get away without being arrested, the problems ceased. Where they didn't dare to do it, problems continued. And then the officials were saying that this is just creating nuisance bears for next year. If you think things are bad this year, wait till next year when these bears are used to eating this kind of food. But you don't change a bear's natural food preferences that easily. And they prefer the natural vegetation, the natural nuts and berries that you just can't match by anything that people provide. So the next spring came, there was the drought ended, bear problems were down. Instead of being terrible, they were below average. The same thing continued into the summer. Nothing that people predicted came true. It's simply that the food ended the problem in the year when food was scarce, and then the next year they didn't do it, and the bears were back to their natural patterns.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Rogers. Emily, any follow-up question for Dr. Rogers?
I'd just like to offer a suggestion, please, to Game and Fish to maybe reopen discussion about this possibility and consult with experts like Dr. Rogers and just reconsider this as a possibility.
All right. Thanks for your call today, Emily. Stuart, you'd like to respond?
Yeah. In response to Dr. Rogers, he was correct. Lake Tahoe came out of the drought. So they came out of the drought into a good mast year for bears. If we don't come out of this drought by next year, we may be in the same situation year in, year out. If we do this for multiple years, you alter the natural course of the bear biology. They're going to find a way to become dependent on this food source. We as a department don't want to create an unnatural food source for bears. We don't want to create an unnatural situation. Again, wildlife evolved through droughts and wet periods, especially in this arid southwest climate. And so we see probably bigger population fluctuations than we see in different temperate zones throughout North America. The further northern latitudes you get, the more consistently wet you are. Where here we see these big wet, dry periods. The other big thing to consider right now is we're coming into the monsoon season. And so we're coming out of our driest period right now. The potential for mast to create and grow right now, it increases with every day's rain. Some of the biggest rains we're having of the year are happening right now. So there is potential for some natural food sources to come on. We're seeing some juniper berries coming on in different places throughout the year. So we want to give it time. We don't want to go in and unnaturally feed bears to support a population we don't think we can.
Well, and before we get a response to that, I do want to let Dr. Rogers and our listeners know that Stuart Lally was the elk biologist for the state prior to being the supervisor of the big mm-hmm. game program. So, Jan, you go ahead, Jan.
Well, my concern about oaks and acorn mast is, that's all settled early on. If those blooms are frozen, and I believe they were, at least in the Sandias and the Manzanos, then it doesn't matter if we have rain now. We're not going to have any acorns.
Okay, and Dr. Rogers, I'm curious. You've heard what Stuart, is the point he made about New Mexico being in a prolonged drought. Was there any information to Lake Tahoe that their drought was maybe just a short-lived one?
Actually, that was the culmination of several years of drought when they put the food out, and so and what I'm at the point of saying that I'm not suggesting that diversionary feeding works everywhere. I think it's what we know now is that food is just as powerful to lead bears out of trouble as it is to lead bears into trouble.
Oh.
And that it's worthy of study. And I wouldn't want to make a recommendation for a different area than here because that familiar with New Mexico. But I just know that we have tried it in Lake Tahoe. It worked where we tried it in a campground area here where they had been just removing and killing bears for years. We tried something different, diversionary feeding. For the 8 years we tried it, reduced problems by 88%.
Well, Dr. Rogers, we've got a lot of callers holding on the line here, but one of our callers is Ann, who is from Lake Tahoe and apparently was in charge of the supplemental feeding program there. Let's bring Ann into our conversation. Good morning, Ann.
Good morning.
Thank you for listening. And what would you like to add to our conversation, given what you've heard so far?
Well, I think that Lynn's suggestions to look into possibilities and Jan's are excellent, and I think that with the state of duress right now in New Mexico, we need to broaden our thoughts on finding possible other solutions, and we would be more than happy to help. We did this. My group is called the Bear League. We're a 1,500 member organization in Lake Tahoe. When we watched a drought completely terrorize homes due to bears coming in. We would sometimes in one day have 25 entries by bears into people's homes. Some of them were people were sitting at the table. These bears were starving, and a bear will not just go away and quietly die when there's no food. He will do everything he can to survive, just like all living things do. So if we continue to just chase them away and tell them, no, you can't eat, you have to go die, that was not going to work. So that's when we stepped in and we asked our Department of Fish and Game, it was called then, to please give us their blessing on doing this. We had the money, we had the foot power, we had, you know, the volunteers let us do this because they're going to burn down the basin. They had already started a house fire, and people were shooting them, shooting, you know, guns in the middle of the night. We could just see disaster coming from all angles. So we did it, and I do have to admit we did it illegally, because in the state of California it is illegal to feed big game. But where we did, and we were very orchestrated. I mean, it was very planned out, and we used natural organic foods. We got them way far away from the communities. Where we did it, the problem stopped. All of our literature says don't feed the bears. So we promote don't feed the bears. So this is something that we took very seriously. Yeah, we didn't just say, oh, well, let's just start feeding them. But we knew we had to do something, and it stopped. It solved the problem. The drought ended, and it had been about a 2 or 3 year drought, culminating in 2007 when there were forest fires that started. The next 2 years were the lowest reported bear nuisance years in, like, forever. So it didn't make them more dependent on human food, as Dr. Rogers says. It simply brought them away from people, led them away from problems, and allowed them to survive and be back in the woods where they hibernated that year instead of under our homes. It was an amazing solution, and more study needs to be done on it, and I think New Mexico Game and Fish has an opportunity that's just golden to be able to do this in this one small area, plan it out, do it right, and let's see what happens. We can all put our heads together and come in and help, and we can explain how we did it and what will work and what maybe won't. But to just say that the bears need to die off, they're not going to just die off. They're going to start causing problems for people.
And we've seen that certainly here in the state. Anne, thank you so much for calling. How great to have you tell us about your personal experience. We're obviously talking about bears today on the KUNM Call-In Show. We're joined by wildlife biologist Dr. Lynn Rogers, Stuart Lally of New Mexico Game and Fish, and Jan Hayes of Sandia Mountain Bear Watch. We're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, we'll take more of your calls. You can reach us at 277-KUNM, 1-877-899-5866. You can also post comments on callinshow at KUNM.org or on the Call-In Show webpage at KUNM.org. Tell us, what do bears mean to you? What significance do they have in your life? We'll take a short break and we'll be right back with you.
Friday night, July 12th at 7, tune in to Salsa Sabrosa for the Afro-Caribbean rhythms of Tradición live from the International Folk Art Market in Santa Fe. Tradición is the house band at a Havana restaurant famous for its mojitos, its storied clientele like Ernest Hemingway and Pablo Neruda, and of course, music. A night of live and local music on Salsa Sabrosa, 7 o'clock, July 12th on KUNM.
It's not a market, it's a miracle. Celebrating 10 years of bringing the world together at the International Folk Art Market Santa Fe. With 180 artists from over 60 countries, it's the largest folk art gathering of its kind. Global Adventure begins Friday, July 12th through Sunday, July 14th on Museum Hill in Santa Fe. Tickets and more information can be found at folkartmarket.org. A message from the tax-exempt Santa Fe International Folk Art Market.
Welcome back to the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm Kathleen Sabo, and today we're talking about bears. And we've got a lot of people stacked up on the phones. Let's go ahead and bring Greg in. I believe you're from the East Mountains. Greg, welcome, and thank you for joining us.
Yeah, good morning. Great topic. Thank you much.
Sure.
We live out in the San Pedro area of the East Mountains, And I've actually lived in bear country in British Columbia and Northern California and whatnot, been exposed to them a lot, but never so much the hungry bears like we have this year and a few years in the past. And there was some discussion about how much they like sunflowers, which is news to me. And so the fact that we've been propagating our meadow with sunflowers may be contributing to our problem, I guess. So that's kind of a question and a comment. The other thing is water. We've had them come get our bird feeders. We've relocated that, hit all the food. We've kind of had them come take down our hummingbird feeders. They seem to rip it down, but they never drink anything. They just kind of destroy them. But now we're having a lot of deer come up to our stock tanks, and I'm wondering if that might also be contributing to our problems. You know, if they're out in search of water, maybe we should be covering that. And then thirdly, deterrence is, you know, I've lived in bear country before where garbage was the nuisance, and as long as you and your neighbors kept the garbage to a minimum, you wouldn't see them because they were just being opportunistic. But you know, now we're getting them, you know, these are desperate bears. And when they come around, they're not too apt to go away. And we've done everything from jump up and down and yell at them and throw rocks at them. And occasionally have had to get the shotgun out and, you know, shoot above them in the tree that they're in. And I hate doing that. What's the best deterrent to scare them off? Is there something that stinks? Is there something that, what do they hate the most?
All right. Thanks so much for calling, Greg, and thanks for your patience for holding on. We're going to go around here, but let's start with Stuart. What would you like to address in that question?
Yeah, I guess to a multiple-part question. Part of that, yes, sunflowers are an attractant for bears, and the reason being it's a high-packed calorie and a little seed, so they could get a lot of their nutrition out of that sunflower. It's a really great bear food. Bears have an amazing nose, one of the best noses in the wildlife kingdom, so they're going to sniff it out from a long ways away. If they're not getting their food source up on the mountain, someone's propagating sunflowers, irrigating them, watering them in a drought year, they're going to find it. It's going to be an attractant to them. Once they find that food source, it's hard to pull an animal off of a food source. If they're going to be determined to keep getting at that food source. Water can be an issue as well. If there's no water sources, they're going to go to available water. Wildlife could sniff out water from miles away. And so if they're sniffing out the only water around, yes, they're going to come. And again, another one of those, it's hard to deter an animal away from its only food sources. Deterrence, you know, there's really not the greatest deterrence when there's nothing there. Like the gentleman said, the best way is to keep the food sources away from the animals as much as possible. So if you have the sunflowers, if you're watering them just for view, it may not be the best in the drought years. You may see bears. It may just be a common occurrence. When you're in their native range, you're going to pull them into you with food sources that are considered almost natural.
Okay, and Jan Hayes, you wanted to comment also.
Well, I mean, if there's absolutely no food source, you're not going to have bears around. Or they may come through, but they're not going to stay. And I mean, with garbage, you absolutely have to put it in a garage or a shed. I locked my shed door. I actually had a bear open the shed door last year. I had a seed in there. They're so smart. One of the things you could do is if you've got garbage or seeds in a shed or a garage, you can put mothballs in a sock. They hate the smell of mothballs. I've been told also that you can use bleach on a towel and drape it over a garbage can, and they won't touch it. I would use that only for the morning that you put out your garbage. So because bears are even smart, they can time when you're putting out your garbage and try to hit it before the garbage man gets there. So, I mean, we're really dealing with an intelligent animal.
Now, Dr. Rogers, is there anything you'd like to add before we move on?
No, people, that's all pretty right.
All right.
Except that in Lake Tahoe, when they tried to reduce attractants, it just meant the only food left was inside, and that's when the house break-ins soared.
Okay. All right. Let's move on to our next caller. It's Daniel from Albuquerque. Good morning, Daniel. Thank you for calling today.
Morning.
Good morning. What would you like to add to our conversation, please?
Well, Well, first of all, greetings to Lynn Rogers. My mom's from Baudette, Minnesota, which is up near Ely, Minnesota.
Oh, Ely. I said Eli. I apologize, everyone.
Up near the Boundary Waters up there. I'm calling from the 13,000 block of Sunset Canyon up in Glenwood Hills, where the 300-pound male bear was trapped last week and removed. And I guess I feel terrible. I was probably the first to call in about the bear to Game and Fish. He had broken into our garbage and our compost bin, and I got very good information from the Game and Fish officer of how to deter bears in the neighborhood. And I called my neighbors, tried to spread the word, you know, take the dog foods in, the bird seeds, keep the trash in the garage. You know, some of the neighbors were receptive and some weren't, and some people don't want to change their normal patterns. They don't want to be inconvenienced. So, you know, everyone has different opinions. What I'd like to hear from the experts is, you know, how do we, in the neighborhood, those of us who want to live in harmony with our wild neighbors, especially those of us right along the wilderness boundary on the east side of Albuquerque, what can we do in our neighborhoods to live more, you know, peacefully with the wild animals in our neighborhood?
All right, Daniel, thank you for your call. And let's go ahead. Jan, you wanted to start.
Well, one of the things we're trying to do, in fact, we're working on it right now on the west side, is we've met with the city councilors, people, and the county commission, and we're going to be putting up, they're going to be putting up for us signs into all those neighborhoods and that are along the mountain on what to do about bears and garbage. And so we're going to have hopefully dozens and dozens of signs into those feeder streets going east on, you know, giving people, reminding people what to do with their garbage. And so hopefully that will help. We're trying to also get more information. We get a lot of information out on the east side of the mountain, but the west side, because there's so much population, it's hard to reach a lot of people. But we do have a brochure that's going out to people in Sandia Heights that their county commissioner is going to do. Our county commissioner on the east side for the last 2 years has helped us by sending out 11,000 brochures on how to coexist with bears to everyone over on the east side, 11,000 of them. So, you know, it takes a while to reach everybody, but we're Bear Watch is a small, relatively poor conservation group, but we're doing the best we can.
And I want to mention, Stuart, that it's pretty easy to find this. It's on the front page of the Game and Fish website. There is a brochure, Keeping Bears Alive and You Safe, a guide for people who live in or visit bear country. And that's pretty easy to find on the website there. I believe we'll have a link to it on our website. What do people do, though, when their neighbors don't want to be inconvenienced? What do they do?
Yeah, again, the best thing, like Jan said, is education. And people are maybe not quite aware of what is best to do. Like the previous caller, the gentleman that called in asking, is this an attractant? He was unaware that sunflowers were an attractant. And again, education is probably our best resource. When we're educating those residents that live within bear country, they begin to understand that what can I do to help prevent attractants into our neighborhoods? And I guess that's probably the best things. Neighbors that aren't cooperative, that's a case by case issue. That I don't know what you're going to have to do with your neighbors, but work together as best as you can as a community.
Okay, let's go ahead and bring in our next caller. It's Todd. Good morning, Todd. Thank you for calling. Okay, Todd, are you on the line with us? No, let's move on to Tom. Tom from Albuquerque. Tom, thank you for joining us today.
Yeah. I lived up by Tim Allen Springer. Are you there?
Yes, yes, Tom, you're with us.
Okay. I lived up by Springer. I had beehives, and shortly after I moved up there with my beehives, the bears hit them. Not one night, but three nights in a row, because after that first taste, they really went after it. I was working out of town. And my solution was to go by a hardware store and grab a really pretty decent charger and then run that down around my beehives. Mm-hmm. The bears came one night. You could see their tracks. And when they hit that fence, they left by a different route. And it was very effective. So if you had a garbage place or something that was attracting bears and you couldn't move it, or water source or something like that, then it would be possible to run they're fairly inexpensive, these stock fence chargers. They're really pretty inexpensive. I did run four strands so that they, no matter how they contacted that wire, they were going to get it. And they did, and I never had any more problems with bears in my beehives.
Well, Tom, thank you for calling and offering a very practical solution. Stuart, you want to say something?
Yeah, just
about
to elaborate on what Tom suggested, what he's discussing is an electrified fence. And so it worked very effective. If the bear comes into the electrified fence, it's a deterrent. He's not getting a reward with a food source, or she's not getting a reward with a food source. Goes to search for a different food source from somewhere else.
Okay, and Jan, you're shaking your head.
Yeah,
here.
It also works around chicken coops. If you're having problems with bears nosing around chicken coops, anything like that, small pens with small animals, it works. They touch that big wet nose, and that does it.
So some very practical solutions.
Uh-huh.
Now, believe it or not, we're nearing the end of our program. And Dr. Rogers, I know you're not in New Mexico here, but given what you've heard, the discussion that we've had, the suggestions, and calling in from Lake Tahoe, your vast knowledge and years of experience, what do you suggest here to the people of New Mexico, to the government of New Mexico?
Well, I could just say that the second that idea of electricity, that is extremely effective. And another thing that people could do if they were uncomfortable walking around where there's bears in the neighborhood, if you carry pepper spray, and the kind that I like best is Halt. It's 1/6 the power of counter assault. You don't need the big fog that goes out and could blow back in your face. This comes out like a squirt gun stream, goes about 15, 20 feet. And if you see a bear closer than you feel comfortable, all of a sudden you can become the most powerful person in the world with one drop of that in an eyeball. You just squirt it at them, and they're not rushing at you. They don't want to get you. It's just that they might be closer than you feel comfortable.
All right. And again, another practical solution. Stuart Liley, we've had some people pleading today with the Game and Fish Department to take a different stance and perhaps consider supplemental feeding, or at least look to the Lake Tahoe experience. Is Game and Fish open to looking at things in a different way?
Yeah, we've looked at it. I guess I would say we look at it for all species. Bears aren't the only species stricken with the drought right now. So we have wildlife across the state that is under drought pressures right now. Elk are, deer are, antelope are. So deer aren't having as many babies or fawns surviving because of the drought. To us, go supplementally feed across the state is unpractical.
Okay, and Jan Hayes, just very briefly, what's the one thing you want to say to people out here today?
I'm only asking for them to try to do this in the sand is. Let's see if it works. Right now we're seeing that we're even having cubs that are being predated. That's how desperate the situation is.
All right. Well, thanks so much. We apologize to our callers who did not get on the air today. Thanks to our guests. New Mexico Department of Game and Fish Big Game Program Supervisor Stuart Liley, Jan Hayes, Sandia Mountain Bear Watch founder, and wildlife biologist Dr. Lynn Rogers, who was kind enough to join us by phone from the North American Bear Center in Ely, Minnesota. Thank you all for making yourselves available to our listeners. Thanks to our callers for helping to develop our discussion today. Thanks to our engineer, Roman Garcia, assistant engineer, Marshall Broyles, and our assistant producer, Michael Hess. Andy Lyman has handled our phones today. Elaine Baumgartel is our executive producer. I'm Kathleen Sabo. This has been the KUNM Collins Show on KUNM, news and music that connect from the University of New Mexico.